everybody. It's Becky Brown with your September Club New Life Collective. September is a mix of feelings. It marks the transition from the sweet days of summer fun to the cooler days of fall. September can be an encouragement for us to reflect on our past and plan for our future. It's time to assess what's working and what we need to change. The one thing in life that is constant is change. One thing that has changed here at New Life, if you haven't noticed, we've changed our brand look as well as our website. We've spent most of the year rebuilding a website. It's user-friendly. It helps us be accessible to the world, literally. Those robots that we use every day have ways to make connections, and we want to be connected to so many people that are looking for help, and we want to be found. And so you'll notice if you go to newlife.com that there's all kinds of new things to explore and help to be found. So that's one of the new changes that we have. But you know, with change, we have expectations. And of course, you've heard me say this many times, the difference between expectation and reality is misery. And it's not that you're not going to have expectations, but it's to recognize what you might be expecting. It might be that you're expecting it to be the greatest day ever, and then something happens, and then all of a sudden reality hits, and it's not so great. New Life is always here for you as you maneuver through those changes. Many of the calls we are sharing this month fall into this category of life not turning out as expected. When has life ever turned out exactly like we thought it would? Life can be full of tension, but it also has a lot of joy, and we want to look for both. We have a saying here at New Life, it's never just another day at New Life. We recently received a testimony from Eric after he and his wife attended our Intimacy and Marriage Weekend. I want you to hear how it changed their marriage. Maybe you or someone you know would benefit by attending Intimacy and Marriage. You can check it out at newlife.com. There's a little quiz there, as well as you can see the topics that are covered during the weekend. Our next Intimacy and Marriage is October 17 through 19 in Dallas, Texas. Put it on your calendar now and encourage another couple or two to come along as well. Let's listen in as our New Life announcer and engineer, Terry McIntosh, reads Eric's testimony letter.
Thanks, Becky. Eric writes, "This was our final hope, and it was so worth it. I'm a Marine veteran who comes from a broken home and an abusive childhood. I'm a fairly new believer going on for 5 years, and I've been married for nearly 4 years. We have an 18-month-old and another baby on the way. My marriage was on its last leg. No hope, no direction. I had never heard of New Life, but when my wife told me about this workshop, I signed up within 30 minutes of hearing about it. With no context and zero expectations, we showed up, and it was life-changing. I fully believe God led us here this weekend. Everything was amazing. It truly felt like I was drowning, and I was just rescued. A wave of insecurity and fear was washed away. I've finally been given clarity and guidance. I was shown love and support, and I was finally shown and taught how to be a husband. The speakers were fantastic. I learned so much and took a copious amount of notes. This was the best weekend of my adult life. Our small group leader was a gift from God. She broke things down in a way that helped me truly understand my wife. For the first time, we're speaking the same language. This was worth every second and every dollar. If you're hearing this, know that I was skeptical. I was filled with doubt and just inches away from divorce. But now I want to try. I want to be a better husband, a better father. I want to change my family tree. I want to be more like Christ and give my family a life worth living. Thank you for saving my life."
One thing about intimacy and marriage is that it is an investment in your marriage, no matter what part of the journey you're on. At our last Intimacy and Marriage, we had a couple that were in their 80s, still working on their marriage. I want to encourage you, whether you're in a difficult place in your marriage or you want to continue to speak into that life that you've created together, join us at Intimacy and Marriage. It'll make the difference in everything. Following are a couple of short teachings this month. Dr. Jill Hubbard shares beating to your own drum while living with life's tensions. Then, Dr. Sherry Denham Keffer has a message on love bombing. And On our first call, Dr. Jim Burns and Dr. Jill Hubbard address Marie as she focuses on parenting a 17-year-old son who's making poor friendship choices. Let's listen in.
I have a couple of thoughts, and they may sound kind of random, but I think that they will go together here. So one is beating to our own drum, and the other is living with the tensions of life. So I don't know if any of you have ever been referred to as beating to your own drum. On some occasions, people have said that about me. Now, sometimes it can be a compliment, right? It can mean creativity, quirkiness, self-assuredness, individuality, boldness. It can be all those things. Or it can also mean, I don't quite get you, like what's wrong with you, or stubbornness or pride, kind of nonconformity or avoidance or kind of even a personal excuse, right? Oh, I beat my own drum, so I don't have to do that. And so it's important to remember that sometimes too much of a good thing is too much, right? We take it and it's no longer really a good thing. And that our character growth is lifelong. And that sometimes we come up with these statements about ourselves to kind of explain things. And then we go, oh, well, I just beat to my own drum. Well, no, we're constantly supposed to be working on our character and growing and looking at, okay, what does that really mean? Is that a compliment? Is that something that has gotten in the way? And so, you know, part of it, too, is to, so this idea of living with the tension of life. We do these things where we create kind of excuses for ourselves because life is full of tension. And we don't always like the tension. And there are some religions that say that the goal is of life is to get rid of all tension, like to reach nirvana, right? Just a total state of peace. And in this life, we know that isn't true. Or if you're an addict, addicts think they should never feel pain or discomfort or tension of any kind. And so they seek to obliterate that. But the thing is we need the tension of life because that is what helps us grow, right? And it's in that tension where God offers us grace. But it needs to be just the right amount of tension. And I heard an analogy this weekend. If you think about stringed instruments, a violin, a cello, a piano, they have a certain tension to them. And it is really powerful. But if you loosen the strings, they sound horrible. And it doesn't work, right? So in order for our life to sing, in a sense, we need to have a certain tension and be tuned in to God and into this journey of growth. And so that tension is actually our friend. So here on this show, we are not going to get rid of all your tension. We may highlight it, but we want to use it for your growth. And if you beat to a different drum, sometimes like I do, it's okay as long as it doesn't go too far.
If we're willing to proactively stay in our own sanctification process, it still is painful. And yet we avoid a whole lot of preventable pain if we're willing to keep working on ourselves. Otherwise, the world and relationships will pile consequences on us if we won't do the work on ourselves. So it's a path of greater healing if you purposefully pursue sanctification.
We were talking with one of our listeners recently, and I have not stopped thinking about her. She was telling us a story about how she met this guy and she wasn't impressed with him, didn't like how he looked. Her gut instincts were saying something was off. But anyway, he did something which I think is not so uncommon, sadly. It's called love bombing. Love bombing. So what is love bombing? Love bombing is when somebody comes into your life in more of a flurry, like they're trying to gain your approval, they're trying to gain your acceptance, they're actually trying to cover up flaws, things that they don't want you to know about. But you, some people you would never know they had flaws because they are coming in their best like best Sunday dressed to impress you. So you might get gifts. You definitely get words of affirmation. They might say things like, I've never met anybody like you. And this caller was even told that he said, you know, well, you don't want to die a woman that doesn't have anybody in her life, right? I mean, but the pull is to get you hooked. Now, why are they doing that? Their number one reason why they are love bombing you is they are trying to catch you in their net. They're trying to catch you in their net like a firefly. They're trying to put you in their jar because they have things that you have, that you have things that they want, right? So like a firefly that they're putting in the jar, it might be, and in this woman's case, it was like her financial. She was, you know, financially established, had a home and all that. And he was coming from nothing.
Yeah.
And this is a pattern. But we asked the question, why was this woman duped? Why those of you that are listening, they're like, I think I was love bombed too. The most painful part of love bombing is once that person has used you, has acquired what they want, they drop you like a hot potato because they're on to gather more. It's like somebody who's love bombing you to acquire more territory, more businesses, more relationships so that they have more to add to themselves. Usually these people have very low self-images and can be narcissistic, right? Oftentimes kind of that hollow self, but they are trying to make you make them better. So I don't know, Dr. Jackie.
Well, you know, they also will turn on you and try to make you feel bad about yourself and make you feel about yourself the way they really feel about themselves. And then others will jump on board. And so if you have a friend and somebody's in their life and they're saying all the right things and doing all the right things and giving them all the great gifts, and you might want to tell them to take a pause and slow down a little bit and pay attention.
Do not run.
Right. All of that is just distraction to keep you from seeing the truth.
Yep.
So if you are on the other side of a love bomber, how do you heal yourself? How do you get better? How do you look at yourself and go, why am I attracted to this? Why do I fall prey to this? And usually it's because of abandoned wounds, right? You may have been out of relationship for a long time. You may enjoy the flattery because you're like a Sahara Desert that's felt parched in the land of being single or not dating. And so get shored up with your girlfriends, with other relationships, stay with a good counselor or coach. Just don't isolate, because typically what happens is, you know, when you're isolated, you fall more prey to people like this. So fortify yourself.
And this can happen with men too. So we don't want you to think that women don't do the same thing.
True.
Women are love bombers as well, and can come in and isolate you and take everything in the same way that a con man can do. A con woman would do the same.
Yeah.
Let's begin our time on the phones with Marie in Houston, Texas, who's watching us on YouTube. Hi there, Marie. Thanks for calling in to New Life Live.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. Thanks for calling in today.
So my question has to do with my 17-year-old, who we just learned very recently has been making some very poor friend choices, which led to poor choices in some activities that he was willing to engage in. It would be wonderful if you could help me understand the difference between Christian counseling and a counselor maybe that's not necessarily promoting themselves as a Christian counselor for teens, because I also learned that a couple of the guys that he was hanging out with have threatened suicide to their parents. And so I don't know all of what my son has been engaging in and exposed to and where his mind is. I don't know either if I'm kind of jumping the gun here and maybe overreacting, but kind of leaning toward wanting to get him into an office talking to somebody that he might be more comfortable speaking with?
Well, at the very least, his friends are struggling, right? So that is an impact on him. And there is always that kind of group think and where people gravitate towards people who are struggling in some of the same ways. And so you see that amongst kids who like engage in cutting. Often they're in a group of friends who are all cutting. And so, I'm glad that you're concerned because we want to try to head these things off at the pass. And being a 17-year-old boy these days is not easy. So in terms of your question, Marie, the difference between like pastoral counseling, where they mainly use the Bible and talk through scripture with someone in terms of addressing the problems. Now, a lot of them have had more training and do more of a counseling type of situation. But I think you can find someone who is a Christian and also is a licensed professional therapist. So that has the training, but also has the worldview as a Christian, but isn't out there saying, okay, this is Christian counseling. No, this is counseling or therapy, but the person is a Christian. So then there's greater trust. And in that distinction, it's not that God isn't a part of it. God is a part of all that we do. I mean, he is the one that makes the changes. But we can address things based on the client's comfort level. And you don't have to throw Christian ease at someone to have it be biblically based, right? Those of us who are Christians and professionals, we have our training, but we're not going to promote a type of therapy that would be contradictive to the Bible and to the Lord. So I think sometimes you get it, and people don't realize this, you get the best of both when you have someone who's a solid Christian but has the professional training.
Yeah, Jim?
Well, I think that's well said. You know, I choose counselors who are Christian. And, there's different philosophies. She actually, when she was talking about pastoral counseling, sometimes that is great and that works. Mm-hmm. There's people who tend to lead in more of a biblical counseling. And I think you can get some help from your church and they can give you good ideas. I would think of a couple things. My background is youth ministry, 17-year-olds. I think all 17-year-olds should just go get counseling because they're going through this. They're not adults yet, but they're also not children. And there you go. So, but I kind of say that in with the tongue in my cheek, but sort of not, to be honest. I think you make the counseling possible. A lot of times a 17-year-old, if you're going, you're going to need counseling, you're with the wrong friends, things aren't going good. That's maybe the last thing they want to do. So I think you the way you speak about counseling to them is also, this is a gift. Counselors are, really can help us. For me personally, I suggest that people, understand what the Bible says, that where there is no counsel, the people fall in the multitude of counselors, there is safety. So, I'm very pro counselor, but that also means my kids didn't hear, you got to be crazy to go see a counselor. Right. So because my kids heard that when it was time for them to get married, they went to premarital counseling with a Christian therapist. If they've had all three of my daughters are married, one of them had some moments in their life and they actually went to a counselor that both Jill and I love, Dr. David Stoop. And they got so much out of it, but they never heard the stigma that goes along with it. So, so I would make sure how you say that. Mm-hmm. Then the other thing I would say about getting them counseling is if they won't go, maybe you go first to someone and look for people, ask around and look for someone who is really good with a 17-year-old. Because honestly, there are counselors who, as with anything, you go to church and there's certain people, they're not going to be good with 17-year-olds. So you find somebody who, really
hopefully
can relate
a
to a 17-year-old. And I would go with a male. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it helps to talk to the counselor ahead of time because, your son may not even bring up the suicide stuff. So you've got an agenda for your son to talk to. But if your son is talking with them, they don't even have a clue where it's going to go. And maybe he goes off on something else, which could be good, could be not good. So sometimes it's best for you to have that conversation or at least a short conversation on the phone. A lot of counselors will allow that. It gives perspective to where you're looking for. But I wouldn't say to your son, you need long-term counseling. I would say, hey, why don't we all get an assessment? I'm going to get an assessment. You get an assessment.
Yeah, and, a place to go to talk about things when we need to.
Right, right.
Right? And you could say, son, I know you're concerned about some of your friends.
Right.
So I thought maybe having someone to talk to about that might be helpful.
Exactly. And Marie, with you, because again, he's making some, he has some friend choices that you're not happy about. He has some activities that you're not happy about. Honestly, you could get some help. They'll give you perspective and they'll let you get that perspective, you know, out first and let them talk. So lots of good people, and you don't have the problem in Houston because there's great Christian counselors. If you lived in a very rural area and there weren't Christian counselors, and I think sometimes even secular counselors who aren't against a biblical worldview, you know, somebody's cutting, they know how to help them. You just go. We get advice from doctors all the time who aren't Christian or not Christian. So again, that's my thought, but I would get them in there.
Well, and also though, I think with young people, if there is any church involvement at all, if you can pull in, like you talked about being a youth pastor, youth pastors are the best.
Yeah, no, they're
talking to teens,
right? And they are doing a form of counseling. They're not trained in it, so they're loving on the person.
That's important. Yeah. They're being
also
a mentor,
you know,
and a friend.
When I was a youth pastor, you know, I had a list of the best counselors in the area who I knew who I trusted. And so sometimes you can go to a youth pastor and say, who do you suggest if you don't know anybody? And they'll say, hey, look at this, is this person does this, this person, you know, does that. And like I used to send a lot of the kids to a guy who used to be a youth pastor, and then he became a therapist. And he was great because he goes, I love the kids you send me because I get to kind of play youth pastor and counselor, and one of the best counselors I knew. Yeah.
Well, and also in a lot of churches, again, I don't know if he is involved or not, but they have, you know, like life groups where it's just all boys, where
Absolutely.
You talk about life transitions and stuff. Yeah. So all that stuff, I think, is really
and
important.
And we as parents have to understand that all of that is counseling.
Yes.
You know, you can't just say, you know, the old idea of, you know, somebody comes into your office, Jill, and you lay them on, you put them on the couch and they go, you know, in my past life, you know, that's not that. And you're not going to do that with a 17-year-old. So it's
come
not
at it from all angles.
It's not either or, it's all of the above. It's hard for a mom when we're desperate though. And they say, I don't want to go to the counselor. I don't want to go there. So you got to be careful how that.
So then maybe you start with, well, maybe you join this life group. Maybe you meet with the youth pastor.
Exactly.
And then go in through the side door.
And if that doesn't work, maybe you say, hey, there's a great retreat that's going on. We'll pay for the retreat if you want to go and bring a friend, because they want a friend. Bring a friend. And all of a sudden they go, wow, they make up the idea. When they own the therapy, if you would, or when they own the personal spiritual growth, or when they own any of that, it's a lot easier than when parents are kind of shoving it down their throat.
Right. And when they're still living at home or they're still in high school, you do have leverage.
You
still.
Do. You do.
Would How We Love Our Kids be a good resource for?
Sure.
Okay, very good. Marie, thanks for calling in today to New Life Live. We're going to send you a copy of How We Love Our Kids from the newlife.com store.
The many layers of dating expectations can be overwhelming to anyone. Feelings are all wrapped up, and the bow on top of the package is sometimes not all that it appears to be. This next call, Mark and I weigh in on 27-year-old Lionel's heartbreaking breakup and the triggers that surfaced 7 months later. Next, Chris Williams, Dr. Sherry Denham Keffer, and Dr. Jackie McHarris come alongside of Ray, who's concerned about his 34-year-old son dating a 42-year-old that he met online. Then J.J. West and Dr. Jill Hubbard encourage Luke, who bears his heart as he shares his testimony after attending Every Man's Battle. Let's listen in as he shares how Every Man's Battle changed his life, opened his eyes, and now feels he has a new beginning. You make a difference in so many lives. Thank you for being part in so many life-changing testimonies. Let's listen.
And we're going to go to Lionel, who is in Philadelphia, listening on WFIL. Thanks for calling in today, Lionel.
Yes, hi, guys.
Hi, how can we help you?
I went through a really rough breakup last year. I'm 27. I just got my RN a few weeks ago. So
congratulations.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yes.
But I had a really good friend of 6 years, and we dated for just 3 months last year. We thought we were a match made in heaven. We had committed to be engaged to each other, and we thought we would get married. And she went to visit, like, her mom, who lived in Korea for, like, 2 months, and her mom's not a Christian. And when she told her mom about us, her mom threatened to commit suicide if she wouldn't break up with me.
Oh,
and
wow.
She broke up with me in August. Like 1 week from today will be the day she broke up with me. So it was a year ago. We went back to being friends. I was really the only one reaching out to her. She would respond to me, but she would never start a conversation until November. And then she confessed to me that she was still struggling a lot with guilt and bitterness over things that happened surrounding the time we were dating and the breakup. And she said she didn't want to deal with that anymore, so she needs to cut me out of her life and go no contact. So that was like a whole nother, you know, thing to grieve, because I just lost a 6-year friendship in November.
Yeah.
So it's been 7 months, and just like a week ago, like, she liked two of my social media posts, which was like the first interaction between us since November. And it's just brought up all these confusing emotions all over again.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of like healing and grieving since. Like, I've read Love Must Be Tough, Healing is a Choice, How We Love, Save People. And I've applied a lot of those lessons and practices to my relationship. A lot of my life relationships since the breakup have improved immensely. And my own self-awareness and emotional, like, maturity and self-regulation has improved a lot. But I feel like I've just been – so I got out of therapy this morning, and my therapist really suggested that I reach out to her. But the terms of the no contact was that she would be the first one to reach out.
Okay. What would you guys suggest to Lionel?
Well, can I just say, Lionel, you get Listener of the Year Century Award for you being 27 years old and have read all of those books and have done the work. That's astonishing, Lionel. And I'm not saying that lightly. I mean it. You're doing the work, and it can still be painful. Mm. Like, you know, what you're describing, you know, it's so confusing. You've done the work. And then you get these likes on social media, and it triggers that old wound. But I love the clarity that you just said. The rule was she would reach out first. Well, in today's culture, liking a post is, I would say, synonymous with making the first move. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying you call and take her out to dinner and all that kind of stuff, because she's got this threat from her mother. That's a whole different subject.
Yeah.
But I do think it would be okay for you to say something, maybe in Messenger or something that's very low key, not a text maybe, that just says, hey, I noticed that you like those posts and it was good to have a response from you. I mean, it could be something as neutral as that.
Yeah.
But let's see what Mark has to say about it.
I'm just curious a little bit here, Lionel. What was the reason that her mom threatened to commit suicide unless she broke up with you?
It's so complicated. Her mom's not a Christian. Mm-hmm. Her and I both are. And she's single and divorced. And my ex is her only daughter. And my ex told me that her mom is scared of losing her to me, of being alone in her old age.
Even though she lives in a different country.
Yes.
Wow. Wow, yeah. So that
is she expecting her daughter to come live with her as she gets older?
That's what my ex said. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's heavy levels of codependency here that are extremely unhealthy, that, you know, your ex needs to do a lot of work to be able to break free from that grip of her mother. I mean, I agree with Becky here with, you know, reaching out in that way, you know, keep your expectations levels, you know, in check with reality, because it could just be that she feels like she's healed enough that she wants to remain friends with you, but no more. So I think you explore that with her. I mean, you may even say, let her know that you still have strong feelings for her, but you want to see where she's at. But what might be important, I think, for your healing is if she is in the same place, you know, for your healing, you may have to make a decision of, this is really confusing for me. I don't know if I can go another 6 months and then have a like another post and then I'm like hooked all the way back in again. Mm. You may have to make a decision for yourself that you detach from her and you have a no contact with her. And I know that's really hard. And I know that, like you said, I can't remember the exact wording that you used at the beginning, but you believe like you guys were this match and you were meant to be for one another. And sometimes our feelings are so powerful, you know, it can change our reasoning. We can, you know, it's called emotional reasoning, where we believe like, oh, the chemistry and the connection is so strong. That's just, you know, there's nothing that I felt like this before. It has to be from God. But sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just us really, really wanting something, and it comes from, and it can come from a place of insecurity. So if it keeps, what I'm saying is, if it keeps hooking you back and it's preventing you from moving on and she's not doing her work, you may have to learn how to you healthily detach. And that may be no contact on your side, because ultimately if you are to get with her and she continues to have this codependency with her mom, it would just exacerbate future problems in a relationship.
Yeah.
Well, and can I say one more thing about that? Here's the other thing. You go forward. Let's say you make a connection with her and you guys get back together. Guess what? She still has that mother and there's still this threat. So you can go all the way forward where, let's imagine that you guys get married. Now your mother-in-law is this threat. So, and I'm not saying you don't go forward. I'm just saying these are things that you can work with, even with your therapist. But the bigger thing, Lionel, is you're going to have grief for what you had hoped. You had made all this progress this last year. And this, just like you just said, Mark, I love, you know, just those hooks. And it's not because you're not doing enough work. It's our feelings are powerful, but they're not always good direction givers. You might want to pass along changes that heal to her, but I mean, you know, it's just, it's part of that journey, but I'm glad you've got a good therapist, and we'll look to hear from you again, Lionel, in the future.
And I don't know if we carry this book. I don't think we do anymore, but How to Get a Date Worth Keeping. I didn't hear you say that you've read that book. That'd be a really good book for you to get.
Yeah. That one's not available that I know of, but Becky, what resource can we send to Lionel?
Well, I would say maybe even giving them the Emotional Freedom Workbook.
Okay,
it'll give them some more to work on.
We're going to go back to the phones. We're going to go to Ray in Los Angeles, California, listening on KKLA. Ray, what's going on today?
Well, good morning. Our son lives on his own, has a solid job, and he's been dating a lady for about 3 weeks. Who he met online, and she also knows and loves the Lord, has a solid job as well. She's 8 years his senior. He's 34. She's 42.
Okay.
She's been divorced, and our question, and they're talking about marriage. And this is my question. This is my question. What advice would you all offer them if they were to call y'all?
Oh, yeah, that's actually a great question. Sherry, I'm really curious on your answer to this. What advice would you give?
Well, I call this the urge to merge. And, you know, there's could be a lot of factors here, right? I don't know if your son has ever been married or in a relationship.
Never been married.
Okay. So has he ever had a serious relationship or no?
Oh, yes, he has.
Okay.
Several.
Well, so this can happen when people meet, they're in this idealized state. Couple of things can happen. Mm-hmm. One is that it can get sexualized very fast. So their first date might include a kiss. Second date might include, you know, having sex together. And I'm not saying that's going on. It's just so interesting how quickly they've merged into, you know, wanting to get married, and all that has happened a few weeks. The other thing that can happen is the urge to merge can be there because it's like a pick me syndrome. The one or the other says in their mind, I want them to pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me, because I want you to pick me before you really understand who I am and what my warts are. Maybe reasons that other people have not been with me or other relationships haven't worked out. So it creates kind of a frenzy on the front side. And so there's probably one or both of those things going on.
Yeah. And what would you tell them?
I would say, what would stop you from slowing down.
Slow the roll.
Slow the roll. And I would probably do a little bit more work. I would ask her, so the last relationship you were in that failed, why did that relationship fail? And what do you believe about yourself? She might feel like I'm not enough. Right. And then I would ask your son the same thing. So the relationships, you've had lots of them, but none of them, you're 34. What would you say has been the most tragic loss you've had? And he might tell us that. And then he might say, I just feel like I'm a failure. I can't really do relationships. So I'd point them into doing their own individual work and not just bringing your shame bags into a relationship, which is just going to make it more messy.
Yes. Yeah.
And I see that. I see the other side of that coin. If I were asked, you know, what should we do or what do I think? To her, I'm going to ask that question too. What do you think went wrong in your marriage? And when she says she, you know, maybe doesn't feel like she's worthy, in my mind, I imagine her saying, well, he didn't do X, Y, and Z, or he was the problem in some way, shape, or form, and maybe also your son. And so if they are not able to look at themselves and haven't done their own work, wherever you go, there you are. They will be the same person in the next relationship that they were as they were in the last relationship. So my recommendation would definitely be that they're doing individual therapy to understand, why would I rush into tying my life to someone within 3 weeks? What am I running from, or what am I chasing after?
That's good. Yeah.
Cher, you mentioned, what would stop you from slowing down the roll. And then you asked, why did your relationship fail? And then that one question, did you ask, what do you believe in yourself? Was that your question?
Yeah. What's the negative belief that you have about yourself that might be causing you to run into this relationship? You know, and it can be relational. Like, and I'm just thinking, I don't know what your son's relationship with his mom has been. That might be like a sensitive question to ask you, because you really called about them. But let's say that he's not felt as nurtured in that relationship. He might be looking for a mommy, you know, and even having that older female that's established might make him unconsciously feel very cared for. So again, there's lots of things that counselors unpack with couples so they wake up to this stuff before.
And he may have had a great relationship with mom, and she may have been super nurturing, and he's missing that.
Luke in Bastrop, Texas. Welcome to New Life Live, Luke.
Hey, guys. How are y'all?
Doing great. Thanks for calling in today.
Yeah, I just wanted to give my testimony from this past weekend in Dallas, Texas for the Everyman's Battle. Man, it was very touching. From JJ talking about the intensive, and then Doug being my facilitator, breakout group facilitator. You know, it God works his magic. One of our guys that was in my group, he kind of had a hard time, but you could see by the end of the weekend of how he turned around from the information that was taught. I just want to say that JJ and Doug and, you know, New Life will have a special place in my heart from what I learned over the weekend, that I'm, you know, honestly, I'm still on a high from it and still applying it, because I'm going through an intensive outpatient right now for mental health. And we watched a video yesterday about addiction, and a lot of stuff in that video I could put together with what I learned this past weekend, you know, and I shared quite a bit as well of like breaking the cycle. Of course, I don't want to go into too much details because I don't want to be a spoiler alert. But,
right. We can't let out the secret recipe. We got to keep that under wraps.
The secret sauce.
But Luke, we would like to hear how it is. What led you to the Everyman's Battle Intensive?
So I did some not nice things to my wife, and her work partner that she works with, her husband had attended one. And it moved him, and they actually blessed me by paying for me to go this past weekend.
Wow.
And I am forever, forever thankful that they gave me the opportunity to go. And I just want to say this too, that, you know, if there's any guys out there listening today or maybe later on, that if you're on the fence, you need to take that leap of faith.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm almost start crying, but, you know, like, y'all really, really changed my life and opened my eyes. I mean, I feel like I have a new beginning. Mm. I actually talked with my wife about the female intensive. Mm-hmm. You know, I did what JJ told me to do, is make sure that I tell her that she has to go to it. I'm just kidding. I didn't do that, JJ. I'm just kidding.
Okay, good.
But we're actually looking into her going to that to get some help as well. And then also we're looking at the marriage intensive that New Life puts on. Mm-hmm. So that way we can,
it's the triple, you know, header.
Closer, yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. So that way we can have a closer, intimate marriage that God intended us to have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes.
And it sounds like, Luke, you really want that now.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. More than anything.
It's wonderful.
You know, and another thing today, we had a little project in our IOP group of, you know, what our addiction looked like before and drawing everything. One of my things that I drew was a mask. And my therapist, she's like, you know, I've heard of a mask, but I never really knew how it played a role in addiction. She's like, so wow. I actually taught my therapist something new.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah. So, you know, it makes me feel really good. Another story, real quick, I don't want to take up too much time, but I was talking to one of the guys that I met in Arizona when I did inpatient. I was telling him about the conference this past weekend, and while we were on the phone, he looked it up. Mm. And he's interested in attending one. I think the one in October that's going to be coming to Dallas again. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or November, whichever one it was.
November will be in Dallas, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So he was like, man, this looks really good because, you know, he struggles with a few things as well.
I love it, Luke, that you are in the same way that somebody told you about the Everyman's Battle Intensive, right. Mm-hmm. And even yes. Paid for your admission to get in, or your registration, yeah. I should say. And now you're starting to tell other people about it because it's a much needed resource. And like yes. Jill said, it's a triple header. We've got the yeah. Everyman's Battle for the guys who are struggling with sexual integrity, and then for the women who have been betrayed by their man's sexual integrity, we have Restore, and then for the couples together, Intimacy and Marriage.
Right, so that you guys can build yeah. a lasting marriage yes. that's yes. even more exactly. more intimate yeah. than before yep. when you were in your addiction and she was feeling
yeah.
alone.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
They have to, the guys have to learn how to walk in integrity.
Mm-hmm.
The women have to have their hearts restored, and it's only then, oh, I shouldn't say only then, and then they can learn how to connect with one another.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's a, you know, a perfect triangle for restoring and rebuilding the marriage
yep.
that's been broken.
And we have one more call and a couple of teachings for you. Doctors Jackie Mac-Harris and Alice Benton come alongside of Marie, who shares about her unstable youth and the overwhelming feeling of unresolved trauma and possibly arrested development. Two teachings will follow. Mark Cameron will share about insecure versus secure beliefs, and then one of the New Life teaching videos by Chris Williams, The Real and Ideal Self. Our New Life library has over 650 videos on so many different topics. You can check them out at newlife.com.
Let's go to Marie in San Dimas, California, listening on 99.5 KKLA. Hi, Marie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just a question about unresolved trauma. I haven't wanted to deal with trauma. And I was wondering, what are the signs, symptoms that come out? I remember having a mother that was not emotionally stable. And I used to bite my nails and pick my sores and do all kinds of things, scared. And then she'd put like McCurchrome on them to stop me from biting. And I just never got any kind of resolution from trauma. And I think there's things that I don't even remember. You know, I remember her crying and having fits and going, I'm running away and I'm never coming back, and her hiding in the garage and crying. And I didn't think that affected me. But now, because I was such a people pleaser growing up, mm-hmm. I now find like I'm taking offense at everything, and that's not normal. Like, I mean, I try not to show it, but I'm just wondering, with your guys' expertise, what shows somebody like me that never had a voice of my own? If I had my own opinion, it was wrong if it didn't coincide with her opinion.
You were just an extension of her.
I guess so.
Yeah. Have you ever done therapy for yourself?
I would quit, and I don't think I was ready.
Yeah.
I think there's things that I just don't want to, I don't remember a lot of my childhood. My mom and dad loved us very much, mm-hmm. you know, but it was dysfunctional in a way yeah. that they were both emotionally distant.
Yeah. And even when our parents love us very much and are emotionally available, we still make mistakes. And those mistakes can leave an imprint that causes a lot of pain.
It was hard. You know, when you're compared to other people, I was a competitive figure skater. Why don't you skate like her or fast as her? If I was little and just drawing, minding my own business, she'd come up behind me and say, well, your cousin Michelle has all the drawing talent. Mm. And I was just devastated, and I'm letting it get to me, and I shouldn't. How do you resolve it, is what I'm saying? Because I know
therapy.
There's a lot of people that have this.
There's no short answer. You've got a lot of work to do. You've got our body holds on to experience. There's a book called The Body Keeps the Score that talks all about that. You are probably in fight, flight, freeze and very sensitive and heightened. And there's probably things that are going on in the world, in your life, on your job, in your family that are making that even more pronounced. And working with a therapist that is trauma informed can help you tease out what were the parts that you're still stuck in, and then help you develop some tools to ground yourself, help you have maybe better reactions and responses. You're taking offense probably because you're making up in your mind what they think or meant by whatever the thing was. But that's been happening to your whole life based on what you just said about your mom and the ways that she would put you down. And so my recommendation would be to find a therapist. Let us help you find a therapist in your area, and so that you can get started on doing this trauma work, because it sounds like now you're ready.
Is your mom still around, Murray?
No, she passed away at 92. And
how long ago?
10 years ago.
Okay.
And I feel. Can I ask you guys another question? Do you get arrested development when you grow up like that? I feel like I was a child inside. There's things that I should have been way ahead of that I wasn't, and I didn't realize it.
You can. We can get arrested development from an illness, from trauma in the family. And we all carry this system around inside of us. And so there may still be a young part of you that is stuck and struggling. And that part might show up for you. It could be helpful for you, since you've already connected with the fact that there's a part of you or another part of you, it would be helpful for you to work with a therapist that uses internal family systems, which is a model that helps you identify the different parts of yourself and the roles that they're taking, and then make some changes through interacting with those parts inside of yourself. Multiplicity is a real thing. More than one thing can be true at the same time. And we can think something and think something else all at the same time. They can be diabolically opposed, and we can still feel those same things at the same time. And an IFS therapist could help you figure that out.
Alice?
I wonder, Marie, if you're afraid that if you touch the trauma and let some of the memories come back to the surface that you've compartmentalized, are you afraid you'll be overwhelmed, lose control, drown in your tears? What are you worried will happen?
I think I'll be overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there's stuff back there that I can't remember. You know what's weird is I don't remember things like my friends do. I don't remember things I should remember, like school, all my teachers. I just don't remember things. It's like I've blocked them out.
Yeah, that's pretty common when you've had a chaotic upbringing. It's common to block things out because it's part of survival. The brain is really good at shutting things away that you're not ready to look at. But with the right guide, the right therapist, you, God, and the therapist can help get you ready. There's an expedited form of therapy called EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and it helps you access some of the emotions and memories that are below the conscious level. And usually you have to start off EMDR with why you don't want to do therapy and all the things you're afraid are going to happen if you do therapy. So that really has to be the initial focus in order for you then to feel safe enough to let the therapist guide you into the trauma. And Marie, even just saying that your mom would say, I'm running away, I'm never coming back, and she would go and hide somewhere, the terror that a child must have felt thinking maybe she really did run away this time, that is more than enough in and of itself to cause some of what you're describing to us. And processing, telling those stories and letting the emotions flow is what will bring relief. It may be overwhelming at the start, but with a good therapist, that overwhelm is quickly contained and dealt with.
And when you're raised by emotionally unavailable parents, you don't have a model for how to be in and express emotion. So you may be an emotional avoider, and emotional avoiders have a poor memory because part of memory is emotion. And so when you don't have emotional association with an experience, it may not stick, or it may not be something you think of. And so it doesn't come up to the part of the brain that you really use to identify things. And so a good therapist can help you with that.
What's on your mind today, Mark?
I want to talk about ants today.
What kind of ants?
Ants. Well, two different types of ants, but the regular ants I'm going to start with. I've got a lemon tree that I'm trying to protect from ants.
So insects, not like your uncle's wife.
No, ants, A-N-T-S. And the reason why I'm trying to protect the tree from them is because the ants actually herd the aphids. Aphids sap the nutrients from the leaves, and so that destroys the tree. But the aphids also produce a sugary secretion called honeydew, and the ants feed off of the honeydew. So what the ants do is they herd the aphids where they want them to go, they feed off of the honeydew, and then they fight off the predators for the aphids, like ladybugs. And so I've been trying to protect my tree from ants. I've been putting in the sticky stuff, but they keep breaking through. They keep finding a way through, and they're resilient. Now, we have ants in our lives too. ANTS, automatic negative thoughts that often break through. They are involuntary. They are most of the time irrational. And many times they're outside of our conscious awareness. So they're things that might pop into a head like, I'm going to mess this up, or everyone's going to judge me, or I'm worthless. And so these are negative self-beliefs. And they come from somewhere in our history. And what the automatic negative thoughts do is they feed off of those negative beliefs, and they keep our negative beliefs hidden, just like the ants feed off of the aphids, and then they fight the predators off. So what do we need to do when we have these automatic negative thoughts? Well, first we need to identify them. So pay attention to your thoughts. So notice when thoughts pop into your mind, especially when you're experiencing a strong emotion. That's usually when they happen. And then I want you to question the validity of that thought, right? Ask yourself, is this thought based on evidence, or is this an assumption, or is it coming from a wounding that I've had? And then we need to challenge these core beliefs and replace them with something else. Now, these core beliefs, they typically come from somewhere in our history. We form them because we've had an experience where our needs didn't get met, and we had to produce some kind of self-protective strategy, or it caused shame in us and anxiety. So some automatic negative thoughts, beliefs that fuel them are things like, I shouldn't feel hurt about this. So a better belief is, my pain is real and I'm allowed to feel it. Or an insecure belief could be, I should be a nice person and not do things that upset others, even if they hurt me. But a more secure belief to replace that would be, I should be a loving person, and love has limits. And one last one is, when others are upset at me, it's my job to fix the problem so they can feel better. But a better belief is, when others are upset, my job is to comfort, and it's their responsibility to manage their emotions and problem solve. And so if we can recognize the thoughts that are popping into our heads and the beliefs that are underneath them, then we can start to change them. 2 Corinthians 10:5 says, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself up against the knowledge of God, and we take captive every thought to make it obedient to Christ. So we have to notice those thoughts and we have to take him captive.
Good words, Chris.
I just believe that in this so much, Mark. I mean, I believe the Mount Everest of relationships is ourselves. And if we pay attention to how, for some of us, negative we treat ourselves and really work hard on identifying those ants, challenging them, and then starting a much better positive relationship to ourselves, everything else in life can change.
Hi, Chris Williams here, licensed marriage and family therapist and co-host of New Life Live. And I'm here to talk about the struggle that we have with ourselves of perfectionism and disappointment and an internal struggle that we enter into when we expect something of ourselves and we can't get there. I think that most of us deal with this problem, and I think it starts here. We have this view of ourselves that I will call the ideal self. And the ideal self sits way up here. And we believe that we will be okay, we will have made it, we will be who God wants us to be, we will be the Christian or the actualized person, as we say in psychology, way up here when we hit the ideal self. But here's the problem. The problem is we wake up in the morning and oftentimes the real self is down here. Our real experience and who we really are down here. And then there's this gap between the ideal self and the real self. And this creates a real dilemma and potentially powerful problem. Because oftentimes what many of us do is in the space in between our ideal self and our real self sits a lot of disappointment, a lot of frustration. I wish I could be more. It also comes with a lot of shoulds. I should be like this. I should do that. And then subtly what comes into that space in between the ideal and the real self is a powerful force called shame. And shame is utilized in these areas to try to get the real self to the ideal self. But here's the irony. It has like a drug-like effect. You see, when we use shame like, hey, you're not good enough and you've got to be better, and or you're unworthy and so you've got to improve in this area of your life to become worthy or lovable, it usually has this very short bump, almost like a drug-like effect. We can correct for a little bit, but shame doesn't have sustainable energy for growth. And so what it does is then it just drops back into the real self and maybe even a little bit lower. So here is what we want to put in the space in between our ideal self and our real self. I want you to try this. If you struggle in this area, put grace there. And that may sound a little bit flowery. It may sound like, nice words, Chris, but what does that actually mean? Well, the first movement of grace is acceptance. And when we start with acceptance, not condemnation, and when we apply this to our real self and we observe ourself, we see ourselves with compassion, with curiosity, and then with acceptance. It's not that we agree with every part of ourselves. It's not that we agree with the things that we struggle with. It's not that we're co-signing this sin within us by any means. It just means that we accept it as a reality. And then if we apply things like care and compassion, we're going to need to apply courage and support and help. What grace then does is it starts moving us a little bit closer to the ideal self. I don't think the ideal self is necessarily a bad or wrong thing. I think it helps provide us a North Star of who we can become, but we got to be careful with it. Because when we live in a when mentality, when I will hit the ideal self, then I will be okay, it leads to a miserable life because we'll never be the ideal self. We'll never be our most perfect and actualized person. We will need to be walking a road paved with grace the rest of our lives. And the movement, the first movement of that, again, is to circle back and accept what I have today. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says this: acceptance is the answer to all of our problems today. It might be a little bit overstated, but I like its sentiment. If we start with acceptance, it gets us into reality, and reality helps us work with the raw material of transformation and change. When we partner that with God and His work within us, as well as the community around us that He provides, we can start moving the needle a little bit more towards the ideal self. And what we want to become is a little bit better, but not perfect. I like to use this term. I'm not looking to get all the way there, but I am looking to move the needle. Acceptance is our chance to move the needle today. Thank you, and I wish you well on your journey.
One of the things that we've started here at New Life this year are our New Life courses. And we have some that are starting September 3rd, like Healing is a Choice, Lose It for Life, and Take Your Life Back. We also have upcoming events. Every Man's Battle is September 26th through 28th in Orange County, California. We have our Life Recovery Conference, which is online, so you can join anywhere, October 4th. And the title is Choosing Wisdom. And you know, that's a biblical mandate for us, is to choose wisdom. And you're going to spend the day learning from so many different wise people on how to do that. And of course, Intimacy and Marriage, October 17 through 19 in Dallas. I heard a saying once that said, the leaves are about to tell us the power of letting go. And so as we leave summer and we start to see the leaves falling, there may be something that you need to let go. So surrender, we talk about it all the time, and maybe embrace a new path. You know, change is always around us, and New Life has been there through all of these years, through your changes, and we want to continue to be there for you. If you have anything that you need us to help you with, you know where to find us, 1-800-NEW-LIFE, or you can check out that new website, newlife.com. We're so grateful for you. Thanks for being part of changing the lives of so many people. God bless you.